they mesh together through a process of leadership, and through a process of leadership that I'm calling system leadership. And I'm using the word system in two quite different ways. The first use of the word system is the system of the school. I've painted, I hope, a picture of a school system in some detail this evening in my presentation. It's quite a complex organization. I've also tried to give the impression that unless the school director can actually engage with all parts of the system, then student achievement is not going to be increased. But also, schools are located inside a wider system. They're part of a sort of a geographical area inside Barcelona. They represent, or they are a representation of the broader and richer Catalonian culture, all right? And increasingly, the head teachers, like Diana, after they have transformed their school, are much more open to actually working with other school leaders in helping them improve their schools. And this is the second sense in which I want to sort of use the word system. System leaders work in their own school as a system, but also engage increasingly with broader schools. Now, I've written many books on this, so I'm not going to go into much detail, but I just want to try and give you a glimpse of what I mean by this in the final sort of few minutes of the presentation. And so I'll leave this next slide, and I'll go on to this slide here. Because here, I think, I've tried to develop a model of leadership which builds on what I have just been talking about. In the center of the diagram is a model purpose, a commitment to the learning potential of all students. And I think that's the vision setting, the setting of direction that the principal has. Then there are the personal qualities and the strategic ability that I've just been talking about. And then these are the areas in which they work. And again, we've talked about this. I'm just putting this in now into a slightly different model here. And what we have here is managing the teaching and learning, developing the organization, and developing people. That is not a bad description, I think, of how an effective leader works. But increasingly, in a number of countries, we're finding the very best of directors, and I'm talking now about between 10 and 20% of school directors, are also taking an increasingly sort of external focus on their work. And time, this is really interesting stuff I'm not going to talk about, but no matter. Let me go on to this slide here. What we're finding from the research that we've done recently is that there are five types of role which directors are taking on. One is that they will lead a partnership, a network, a small group of schools, in an area of Barcelona. They may actually decide to take on a really challenging school as part of their commitment to the system for a period of time. What we're finding is proving really effective is that school leaders are actually who have run a successful school, like Diana has, will then partner with an unsuccessful school and actually coach them to become successful. And we're finding that people like Diana, who've been through the process of change, who've developed a system for behavior, a system for attendance, who've developed a good teaching strategy, who've developed a good curriculum, are able to take those practices and share them, put them into place with the other school. And that's proving to be a very sort of rapid form of school improvement. We're finding that within sort of 2 years, a school that's failing can become sort of averagely successful through collaborating with another school in that way. We're finding principals who are developing effective curriculum and just making them available, disseminating them. We're also finding other directors who will take on a role, a more formal role, in a city like Barcelona, in an area like Catalonia, in order to actually pursue a system work. So that is something that I think is actually quite exciting. And I'm going to leave these slides as well, if I may. And I'm going to just take you through to this slide here. And this is a little bit of my own history, because when we found this was actually happening, I said, well, why can't we actually use these principles across the whole of the English system? Can we actually use these principles of collaboration to change all of the secondary schools in England? And on the screen in front of you is a graph which illustrates the performance of the 3,313 secondary schools we had in England. And I had my statisticians assess them according to different levels of performance. Again, I won't bother you with the detail, but they moved from very low achieving schools, which were about 483, so about a sixth of the schools, through to the schools which were really leading the system. And you can see how the different colours pattern out against a graph like that. So these are the very high performing schools, and this illustrates the sort of the value added that schools are showing. So it's a way of segmenting the school system. So I then said, let's then begin to describe these schools. And for the sake of the argument here, I've just taken out, reduced this to four different school types. So these are failing schools and these are leading schools. So can we begin then to identify school improvement strategies that are more appropriate for schools at different levels of performance? Too often in England, we just sort of try to use the same strategy to improve every school, which of course doesn't work. But then, if you then begin to say, well, if we can provide these improvement strategies not from an external agency, but we can provide them from other schools through the use of system leadership working and more partnership working, then we're moving away to a system which is much more dependent upon the individual parts of the school improving themselves, rather than being reliant on sort of a top-down change. So if you go back to my initial diagram of the balance between top-down and bottom-up change, this is the other side of that diagram, where schools are increasingly working with each other to help them improve. And that, we found, provides a much more fertile context, a much more transformative way of working. But of course, the secret of this is the level of leadership inside the school. And that's why I believe that not only do school leaders need to have the types of characteristics, employ the types of strategies that I have been talking about in the bulk of the presentation, but I believe that once we have school leaders who are prepared to work outside of their school, prepared to partner with other schools, then we have the potential for real transformation of our school systems. And that's why that diagram that I started with, which summarized the OECD's work on school leadership, which looked at nesting the different levels of the classroom, the school, the local area, and the system as a whole, is so important. So thank you for your attention. I'm sorry, I must probably have gone on a little bit too long, but no matter. I'm now hoping that I can engage in responding to some of your questions, and I look forward to that. Thank you very much indeed.
Bé, moltes gràcies al professor Hopkins per haver compartit amb nosaltres experiència i coneixements a partir de les seves investigacions. Seria el moment d'obrir un torn de preguntes i d'intervencions. Ens queden uns 15 minuts, és a dir, que podem obrir el debat. Hi ha alguna persona per allà? Si hi hagués algú més, agafaríem paraules. Un altre per aquí. Faríem un primer torn i un altre per aquí. Quatre. Molt bé. Doncs, si us sembla, Pepe.
Molt bé, moltes gràcies per la seva presentació. M'agradaria veure si és possible que pogués resumir les quatre resistències més importants que es van trobar en el sistema o en la cultura de les escoles a l'hora de posar en marxa el programa, podríem dir-ho així, de leadership en el sistema educatiu. Gràcies.
Sí. Qui era l'altre? Sí, no. No hi havia algú per aquí?
Bona tarda. Jo li volia preguntar quin era el panorama que es va trobar o si hi ha alguna tendència general a Anglaterra sobre la col·laboració entre centres o entre equips directius d'una manera, diguem-ne, autoorganitzada. Si hi ha una tendència a col·laborar en xarxa entre els centres educatius i equips directius o, per contra, es va trobar en una situació de poca col·laboració entre centres.
L'altre.
Jo voldria preguntar si el paper d'alguns models, com per exemple l'FQM o bé la ISO 9001, ha tingut alguna rellevància amb el sistema anglès que sigui notable i que es pogués aprofitar també aquí.
Ja n'hi havia una altra.
Sí, moltes gràcies. Jo em quedaria una miqueta amb el que ha comentat del cas de la Diana, que normalment les innovacions passen d'escoles que en principi estan catalogades com que no funcionen a escoles que funcionen. I, per exemple, aquests canvis se fan en aquest tipus d'escoles. M'interessaria que pogués, no sé, apuntar si hi ha algun altre tipus de models on no sol mirem l'èxit de l'escola pel rendiment dels alumnes, sinó també amb estratègies d'innovació que presenten. Perquè el que ens passa aquí o l'experiència que tenim aquí és que a partir de situacions que no funcionen a millorar, va bé, però aquelles escoles que en principi ja tenen bons resultats tenen moltes reticències a crear processos d'innovació. Doncs m'agradaria que pogués acotar una miqueta això si té alguna experiència. Gràcies.
Si ens pot respondre ara aquestes quatre preguntes, diverses, però...
Yes, absolutely, and they're very, very good questions. Thank you so much for them. The first question is, what were the key resistant points to the type of approach to leadership that I've been describing? The first resistor is the school or the school director not taking responsibility for the performance of his or her students. I hope this doesn't happen in your country, but it used to in England a lot, where one director would say of another school, well, you just can't teach those children, right? Or I wouldn't want to be the director in that school because they're just awful kids, right? For me, one of the most frightening and most worrying of resistors, where the school is not taking responsibility for what it can do for young people and assuming that poverty or social class or geographical area is a determinant of success. Breaking through that is really, really important. And part of that is to do with the personality of the head teacher. But the other thing has been the use of data in our system, that we can actually see that schools that come from very similar socioeconomic areas, some schools are doing very much better, Others are doing worse, and you're forced into asking why, right? And the answer, of course, is some of the things I've been talking about this evening. So the first resistance is not taking responsibility. The second problem, I think, has been a lack of skill. That I think that, you know, increasingly the types of issues I've been talking about this evening are quite complex. And, you know, all the very best head teachers that I know have sort of had to learn the skills on the job. They've taught themselves the skills. It's taken them some time, and it's been a hit-and-miss approach. We need more systematic training in doing this. I think there's an issue to do with governance in the system, that in many systems that I work with, there's a fairly high degree of paternalization in the system. The school is, you know, is located in a municipality, which is located in a region, and everyone sort of looks after each other rather than actually holding people to account. And I think the fourth issue is, and I'm doing a lot of work in Australia at the moment, and I'm going back there on Saturday, and I know that one of the issues I'm going to have to deal with next week is the lack of courage of a director in order to face a teacher with underperformance. We don't actually have the courage of our convictions enough to actually sort of engage people in real debate on what actually matters. We allow individualism to persist for too long. The second question about collaboration is a really interesting one, and there's no real clear-cut answer to that. We went through a stage in England about 10, 12 years ago, or 10, 15 years ago, where there was a high degree of competition in the system. We'd just introduced national testing, so schools were being compared upon their results. We were devolving budgets down to schools, so there was competition for students. And that acted as a great sort of detractor of any form of collaboration. We've seen, however, directors have become used to managing budgets, have they become used to sort of dealing with roles, with the number of students they have, that they have actually then almost automatically begun to collaborate more. Because they see when they begin to collaborate, they can learn new things. And perhaps by actually sharing what they're doing well, they'll see is good for the other school, but also they'll learn something from that school as well. And that has been something which has happened almost naturally, almost organically inside our system. I did in a number of ways to more systematically introduce networking policies when I was in government. We actually involved, I think, 8,000 primary schools in a networking program, which is quite a lot of schools. But that seemed to, in a sense, go alongside this natural shift towards networking, which has grown up over the last five or six years. In fact, it's quite interesting when you talk to really good heads. When I was in government, they said, "Well, there are two types of networks. There are the types of networks which you ministers get us into, so we can make money, we can earn money out of that, or so on." And there are types of networks we engage in because we want to learn from each other. And we found that those two trends seem to have gone alongside each other. ISO 9000 is in my experience, is a good form of organizational redesign. It fits very well into that aspect of what I was talking about this evening. It ensures that place inside the school, and one of the problems in underperforming schools that I know around the world is they don't have systems in place. So it seems to me to be as good an intervention as any to promote more effective forms of management and organization. The drawback from it is it doesn't have a specific educational focus, and that by itself is not sufficient. There has to be a lot of input, a lot of thought going into pedagogy and teaching and learning, as I've tried to sort of explain this evening. And then the final question was, I just gave this one example of Diana's school, which was a failing school, which became an excellent school. Yes, and of course there are, a number of other trajectories or different sort of improvement patterns. One of the most difficult that we found to deal with is what we call the coasting school. Don't know how well that translates. The coasting school, it's a school which is just going along in an average way, no innovation, people are quite happy with what they're doing. And typically these are schools which are areas which are economically quite sort of privileged, so that the schools perform quite well, but they perform quite well because of the intellectual and social capital that the students bring with them to the school, rather than what the value the school adds to it. And yet there's a degree of complacency there, because we're doing all right, we don't have to change. And we found that is actually quite a difficult problem to deal with. And again, the use of data, the use of inspection reports, which actually confronts the school with their inadequacy, is an important way forward. The other problem, which is a variation of that, is that we have a very high degree of variation within schools in England. I don't know what your variation is here, but PISA said that there was four times the amount of variation within schools in England than between schools. And that means that some teachers are teaching well, others are teaching pretty badly. So how you actually deal with consistency is another sort of intervention strategy. And the final one is that, high-performing schools seem to improve best by partnering with low-performing schools. That is that provides a very strong, a learning opportunity for high-performing schools, as long as they have the level of resource made available to allow them to do that.
Podríem fer encara una, dues preguntes, dues i acabaríem, sí. Breus, perquè ens queden pocs minuts, realment, sisplau.
Molt breument. Una pregunta. Els líders es formen? És possible formar un líder? Una persona que en principi no és líder, és possible transformar-la en líder? Com? De quina manera?
Bona tarda. Ens agradaria saber, si us plau, quin impacte tenen les tecnologies de la informació i la comunicació en tot el que suposa les escoles innovadores.
Ràpidament, l'última pregunta per aquí. Val, n'hi ha dues encara.
Moltes gràcies per la seva intervenció. M'ha agradat molt que parlés, ni que sigui molt breument, de la personalització de l'aprenentatge, que crec que és un concepte aquí poc explorat d'alguna manera. De totes maneres, volia fer una observació en el sentit de que parla del lideratge per millorar els resultats, però aquests resultats sempre es considera que es mesuren d'una manera més o menys conservadora o oficial. Sempre es mesuren probablement contra els SATs, els SATs, els exàmens estatals, i sembla que hi hagi en aquests moments al Regne Unit un moviment important de contestació. Si no tinc mal entès, l'Associació Nacional de Directors Britànica, en un 94%, va votar fa pocs dies de boicotejar els exàmens estatals per mesurar els nivells de les escoles. Com lliga el lideratge amb aquesta mesura de resultats tradicional que sembla que té seriosos problemes al Regne Unit en aquests moments? De fet, les proves de secundària ja han sigut anul·lades recentment, si no m'equivoco. És a dir, crec que hi ha un tema molt important que valdria la pena conèixer. Gràcies.
Se m'estan afegint preguntes. Per aquí n'hi havia una, oi que sí? O no?
Hi havia algun altre? Eren aquests dos? Val, molt bé, molt bé. Tanquem el torn de preguntes perquè no tenim més temps.
Si voldria preguntar-li la seva opinió sobre la variació referent a l'elecció de la direcció des de l'autogestió, passant per la proposta del centre i l'anomenament per part de l'autoritat fins a la proposta directa de l'autoritat, aquesta variació.
Molt bé, moltes gràcies. Professor Hopkins ja ens ha dit que el tema era ampli i complex i que no l'acabarem avui. Li prego que les respostes siguin breus també per un tema de timing i de temps. Moltes gràcies.
Okay. Well, again, I wish we did because they're fantastic questions. Thank you. Can we train leaders? Well, of course, the answer to that is yes and no. There are people who are, I do believe, natural leaders who bring a variety of experiences and personality traits to the job, which make them quite outstanding. But the logic of what I have been trying to say this evening is that we can actually, in terms of the broad grouping of people who want to become leaders, we can train them. We now know, you know, a lot more about what are the skill sets, what's the knowledge, what are the dispositions required of effective school leaders. I've tried to share that with you this evening. And I do believe we can produce training programs that will help people with average sets of natural skill to become quite good at that. So there is a way of training to become a shift, but I do think one mustn't underestimate, you know, the natural talents that people bring with them. I think the issue to do with ICT, I'm not an expert in ICT, so I'm sorry, I will be short in responding to this question, but I do think the issues to do with ICT are quite problematic in education currently. I don't think that we have, as a global system of education, I don't think we have exploited sufficiently the use of ICT in learning. I don't think we've actually developed a sufficient practice about this. But we seem to be very good at putting computers into schools. We're not very good at helping teachers use them in innovative ways. And I still think that is we're still to realize the potential of ICT. It may be we have to just, you know, get the hardware in place first. It may well be we have to get rid of people who have learnt their ICT skills like I have, sort of on the job. What we want is our children who seem to have this embedded in their DNA to become teachers, and then the transformation will actually occur. But the evidence so far is good insofar as ICT can accelerate learning, can accelerate the sorts of things we've been talking about this evening, but it's not practiced widely enough as yet. The penultimate question is about sort of results and judging leadership on results, and we've most probably got a pretty bad reputation in England for doing that. There's this old saying is that you value what you measure, and you measure what you value. And to a large extent in England, we've been measuring or using as the measure school performance at the age of 11 and 16. Now, of course, I want to measure the broader outcomes of schooling. I hope that was clear from the way I was talking this evening. At the present time, we don't have very good measures of that. And I think that is problematic. I hope that over the next number of years we'll be able to get much better measures of students' sort of learning capability, their confidence, and so on. But I don't think the level at which a school performs in terms of exam results is not a bad proxy for other outcomes of schooling. All right. And the evidence that we've got from you know, all of the research studies, inspection studies we've done in England anyway, is that the schools who perform really well in terms of examination results do pretty well also in terms of developing confident and competent young people. We've got really good examples of schools in very underprivileged areas doing extremely well on examination results, but also giving a rich and broad education. So, you know, and the reason for the union revolts, well, that's part to do with micropolitics inside educational systems. It's a long issue, but I think we need to use data. Yes, we need broader forms of data, but the data that we currently have is not too bad a proxy. And finally, in terms of the variability in the appointment of principals, currently in England, directors are appointed by the school governors. There's a council set up to govern individual schools. They're the people who are responsible for the appointment of a director, sometimes on the advice of local officers. So that's the way it works. But from just recently, every school leader in England, before you can be appointed as a school leader, you have to actually pass national examinations. You have to actually have a national qualification that reflects the standards that we have developed through the work that we've done with our National College for School Leadership. I'm sorry they're quite short responses, but thank you for the questions.
Moltes gràcies al professor Hopkins per l'interès i els suggeriments que ens ha fet. Ell deia si el que ens parlava des del context d'investigació a l'OCDE o a Anglaterra doncs podia ser d'interès al context català. Crec que la participació i les preguntes que hi ha hagut i l'assistència d'avui doncs també ens mostra l'interès del que ha pogut compartir i també l'entusiasme amb el que ho fa i el convenciment amb que el lideratge doncs en efecte pot ser motor de canvi, de millora de l'acció i de la pràctica educativa en el centre. Dir-vos que podeu trobar, com sabeu, a la pàgina web de Debats d'Educació d'aquí uns dies la ponència, que també publicarem i farem arribar el text que ens ha presentat el professor Hopkins a la col·lecció de debats. I dir-vos també doncs, que, com que el tema aquí no s'acaba, doncs, hi ha uns quants dels que som aquí que estem convocats a un seminari demà, perquè hi ha unes entitats doncs, que fa un temps que estem treballant justament amb el tema del lideratge educatiu i el lideratge en les organitzacions educatives, i que hi ha el Consorci d'Educació de Barcelona, la Fundació Blanquerna, SADE, Jesuïtes d'Educació, Joan 23, Associació Axia i Fundació Jaume Bofill, que s'han constituït com a grup de reflexió i grup promotor del tema del lideratge, i que també el que pugui sorgir del seminari que farem demà durant tot un dia, doncs us podem comunicar d'alguna manera les propostes a les que arribem o si és de l'interès d'alguns, doncs que ens feu arribar el vostre interès i que es tracta d'ampliar d'alguna manera doncs, el grup de treball i la gent interessada en avançar en tot el que fa referència al lideratge, a l'educació i com a innovador de la pràctica educativa i millora dels resultats. Moltes gràcies i bona nit.